Chapter 22. Watchers. "Nothing is happening as I expect," Moiraine muttered, not expecting an answer from Lan. The long, polished table before her was littered with books and papers, scrolls and manuscripts, many of them dusty from long storage and tattered with age, some only fragments. The room seemed almost made of books and manuscripts, filling shelves except where there were doors or windows or the fireplace. The chairs were high-backed and well-padded, but half of them and most of the small tables held books, and some had books and scrolls tucked under them. Only the clutter in front of Moiraine was hers, though. She rose and moved to the window, peered into the night towards the lights of the village not far off. No danger of pursuit here. No one would expect her to come here. "Clear my head and begin again," she thought. "That is all there is to do." None of the villagers had any suspicion that the two elderly sisters living in this snug house were Aes Sedai. One did not suspect such things in a small place like Tifan's Well, a farming community deep in the grassy plains of Arafel. The villagers came to the sisters for advice on their problems and cures for their ills and valued them as women blessed by the light, but no more. Adelius and Van Deen had gone into voluntary retreat together so long ago that few even in the White Tower remembered they still lived. With the one equally aged warder who remained to them, they lived quietly, still intending to write the history of the world since the breaking, and as much as they could include of before, one day. In the meantime, there was so much information to gather, so many puzzles to solve. Their house was the perfect place for Moiraine to find the information she needed, except that it was not there. Movement caught her eye and she turned. Lan was lounging against the yellow brick fireplace, as imperturbable as a boulder. "Do you remember the first time we met, Lan?" She was watching for some sign, or she would not have seen the quick twitch of his eyebrow. It was not often she caught him by surprise. This was a subject neither of them ever mentioned. Nearly 20 years ago she had told him, with all the stiff pride of one still young enough to be called young, she recalled, that she would never speak of it again, and expected the same silence of him. "I remember," was all he said. "And still no apology, I suppose. You threw me into a pond." She did not smile, though she could feel amusement at it now. "Every stitch I had was soaked, and in what you bordermen call new spring, I nearly froze. I recall I built a fire, too, and hung blankets so you could warm yourself in privacy." He poked at the burning logs and returned the fire tool to its hook. Even summer nights were cool in the borderlands. "I also recall that while I slept that night, you dumped half the pond on me. It would have saved a great deal of shivering on both our parts if you had simply told me you were Aes Sedai, rather than demonstrating it, rather than trying to separate me from my sword. Not a good way to introduce yourself to a border man, even for a young woman." "I was young and alone, and you were as large then as you are now, and your fierceness more open. I did not want you to know I was Aes Sedai. It seemed to me at the time you might answer my questions more freely if you did not know." She fell silent for a moment, thinking of the years since that meeting. It had been good to find a companion to join her in her quest. "In the weeks that followed, did you suspect that I would ask you to bond to me? I decided you were the one in the first day." "I never guessed," he said dryly. "I was too busy wondering if I could escort you to Chachin and keep a whole skin. A different surprise you had for me every night. The ants, I recall, in particular. I don't think I had one good night's sleep that whole ride." She permitted herself a small smile, remembering. "I was young," she repeated. "And does your bond chafe after all these years? You are not a man to wear a leash easily, even so light a one as mine." It was a stinging comment. She meant it to be so. "No." His voice was cool, but he took up the fire tool again and gave the blaze a fierce poking it did not need. Sparks cascaded up the chimney. "I chose freely, knowing what it entailed." The iron rod clattered back onto its hook, and he made a formal bow. Honored to serve, Moiraine Aes Sedai. It has been and will be so always. Moiraine sniffed. Your humility, Lan Gaidin, has always been more arrogant than most kings could manage with their armies at their backs. From the first day I met you, it has been so. Why all this talk of days past, Moiraine? For the 100th time, or so it seemed to her, she considered the words to use. Before we left Tar-Valon, I made arrangements, should anything happen to me, for your bond to pass to another. He stared at her, silent. When you feel my death, you will find yourself compelled to seek her out immediately. I do not want you to be surprised by it. Compelled, he breathed softly, angrily. Never once have you used my bond to compel me. I thought you more than disapproved of that. Had I left this thing undone, you would be free of the bond at my death, and not even my strongest command to you would hold. I will not allow you to die in a useless attempt to avenge me, and I will not allow you to return to your equally useless private war in the Blight. The war we fight is the same war, if you could only see it so, and I will see that you fight it to some purpose. Neither vengeance nor an unburied death in the Blight will do. And do you foresee your death coming soon? His voice was quiet, his face expressionless, both like stone in a dead winter blizzard. It was a manner she had seen in him many times, usually when he was on the point of violence. Have you planned something without me that will see you dead? I am suddenly glad there is no pond in this room, she murmured, then raised her hands when he stiffened, offended at her light tone. I see my death in every day, as you do. How could I not, with the task we have followed these years? Now, with everything coming to a head, I must see it as even more possible. For a moment he studied his hands, large and square. I had never thought, he said slowly, that I might not be the first of us to die. Somehow, even at the worst, it always seemed... Abruptly he scrubbed his hands against each other. If there is a chance I might be given like a pet lapdog, I would at least like to know to whom I am being given. I have never seen you as a pet, Moiraine said sharply, and neither does Mirel. Mirel, he grimaced. Yes, she would have to be green or else some slip of a girl just raised to full sisterhood. If Mirel can keep her 3 Gaidin in line, perhaps she has a chance to manage you. Though she would like to keep you, I know, she has promised to pass your bond to another when she finds one who suits you better. So, not a pet, but a parcel. Mirel is to be a caretaker. Moiraine, not even the Greens treat their warders so. No Aes Sedai has passed her warder's bond to another in 400 years, but you intend to do it to me not once but twice. It is done, and I will not undo it. The light blind me if I'm to be passed from hand to hand. Do you at least have some idea in whose hand I will end? What I do is for your own good, and perhaps it may be for another's as well. It may be that Mirel will find a slip of a girl just raised to sisterhood. Was that not what you said? Who needs a warder hardened in battle and wise in the ways of the world? A slip of a girl who may need someone who will throw her into a pond. You have much to offer, Lan, and to see it wasted in an unmarked grave, or left to the ravens, when it could go to a woman who needs it, would be worse than the sin of which the white cloaks prate. Yes, I think she will have need of you. Lan's eyes widened slightly. For him it was the same as another man gasping in shocked surmise. She had seldom seen him so off balance. He opened his mouth twice before he spoke. And who do you have in mind for this? She cut him off. Are you sure the bond does not chafe, Lan Gaidin? Do you realize for the first time only now the strength of that bond, the depth of it? You could end with some budding white, all logic and no heart, or with a young brown who sees you as nothing more than a pair of hands to carry her books and sketches. I can hand you where I will, like a parcel or a lapdog, and you can do no more than go. Are you sure it does not chafe? "Is that what this has been for?" he grated. His eyes burned like blue fire and his mouth twisted. Anger, for the first time ever that she had seen, open anger etched his face. "Has all this talk been a test? A test? To see if you could make my bond rub? After all this time? From the day I pledged to you, I have ridden where you said ride, even when I thought it foolish, even when I had reason to ride another way. Never did you need my bond to force me. On your word, I have watched you walk into danger and kept my hands at my sides when I wanted nothing more than to outsword and carve a path to safety for you. After this, you test me?"
"Not a test, Lan. I spoke plainly, not twisting, and I have done as I said. But at Faldara, I began to wonder if you were still wholly with me." A wariness entered his eyes. "Lan, forgive me. I would not have cracked the walls you hold so hard, but I must know.
Why did you do as you did with Rand?" He blinked. It was obviously not what he expected. She knew what he had thought was coming, and she would not let up now that he was off balance. "You brought him to the Ammerland, speaking and acting as a border lord and a soldier born. It fit, in a way, with what I planned for him, but you and I never spoke of teaching him any of that. Why, Lan?"
"It seemed right. A young wolfhound must meet his first wolf some day, but if the wolf sees him as a puppy, if he acts the puppy, the wolf will surely kill him. The wolfhound must be a wolfhound in the wolf's eyes even more than in his own if he is to survive."
"Is that how you see Aes Sedai? The Ammerlin? Me? Wolves out to pull down your young wolfhound?" Lan shook his head. "You know what he is, Lan. You know what he must become. Must. What I have worked for since the day you and I met, and before. Do you now doubt what I do?"
"No, no, but..."
He was recovering himself, building his walls again, but they were not rebuilt yet.
"How many times have you said that Ta'veren pulled those around them like twigs in a whirlpool? Perhaps I was pulled too. I only know that it felt right. Those farm folk needed someone on their side. Rand did, at least. Moiraine, I believe in what you do, even as now, when I know not half of it. Believe as I believe in you. I have not asked to be released from my bond, nor will I. Whatever your plans for dying and seeing me safely disposed of, I will take great pleasure in keeping you alive and seeing those plans at least go for nothing."
"Ta'veren," Moiraine sighed. "Perhaps it was that. Rather than guiding a chip floating down a stream, I am trying to guide a log through rapids. Every time I push at it, it pushes at me, and the log grows larger the farther we go. Yet I must see it through to the end." She gave a little laugh. "I will not be unhappy, my old friend, if you manage to put those plans awry. Now, please leave me. I need to be alone to think." He hesitated only a moment before turning for the door. At the last moment, though, she could not let him go without one more question. "Do you ever dream of something different, Lan?"
"All men dream. But I know dreams for dreams. This," he touched his sword hilt, "is reality."
The walls were back, as high and hard as ever. For a time after he left, Moiraine leaned back in her chair looking into the fire. She thought of Nynaeve and cracks in a wall. Without trying, without thinking what she was doing, that young woman had put cracks in Lan's walls and seeded the cracks with creepers. Lan thought he was secure, imprisoned in his fortress by fate and his own wishes, but slowly, patiently, the creepers were tearing down the walls to bear the man within. Already he was sharing some of Nynaeve's loyalties. In the beginning he had been indifferent to the Emmonsfield folk, except as people in whom Moiraine had some interest. Nynaeve had changed that, as she had changed Lan. To her surprise, Moiraine felt a flash of jealousy. She had never felt that before, certainly not for any of the women who had thrown their hearts at his feet, or those who had shared his bed. Indeed, she had never thought of him as an object of jealousy, had never thought so of any man. She was married to her battle, as he was married to his. But they had been companions in those battles for so long. He had ridden a horse to death,
then run himself nearly to death, carrying her in his arms at the last to Anaya for healing. She had tended his wounds more than once, keeping with her arts a life he had been ready to throw away to save hers. He had always said he was wedded with death. Now a new bride had captured his eyes, though he was blind to it. He thought he still stood strong behind his walls, but Nynaeve had laced bridal flowers in his hair. Would he still find himself able to court death so blithely? Moiraine wondered when he would ask her to release him from his bond, and what she would do when he did. With a grimace, she got to her feet. There were more important matters, far more important. Her eyes ran over the open books and papers crowding the room. So many hints, but no answers. Van Deen came in with a teapot and cups on a tray. She was slender and graceful, with a straight back, and the hair gathered neatly at the nape of her neck was almost white. The agelessness of her smooth face was that of long, long years. "I would have had Jaime bring this and not disturb you myself, but he's out in the barn practicing with his sword." She made a clucking sound as she pushed a battered manuscript aside to set the tray on the table. "Lan being here has him remembering he's more than a gardener and handyman. Guy Dean are so stiff-necked. I thought Lan would still be here. That's why I brought an extra cup. Have you found what you were seeking?" "I'm not even sure what it is I am seeking," Moiraine frowned, studying the other woman. Van Deen was of the green Aja, not brown like her sister, yet the two of them had studied so long together that she knew as much of history as Adelius. "Whatever it is, you don't even seem to know where to look." Van Deen shifted some of the books and manuscripts on the table, shaking her head. "So many subjects. The Trolloc Wars, the Watchers over the Waves, the Legend of the Return, 2 treatises on the Horn of Valir, 3 on Dark Prophecy, and light. Here's Santhra's book on the Forsaken. Nasty, that. As nasty as this on Shadar Logoth. And the Prophecies of the Dragon in 3 translations, and the original. Moiraine, whatever are you after? The prophecies I can understand. We hear some news here, remote as we are. We hear some of what's happening in Ilion. There's even a rumor in the village that someone has already found the horn." She gestured with a manuscript on the horn and coughed in the dust that rose from it. "I discount that, of course. There would be rumors. But what? No. You said you wanted privacy, and I'll give it to you." "Stop a moment," Moiraine said, halting the other Aes Sedai short of the door. "Perhaps you can answer some questions for me." "I will try." Van Deen smiled suddenly. "Adelius claims I should have chosen brown. Ask." She poured 2 cups of tea and handed one to Moiraine, then took a chair by the fire. Steam curled over the cups while Moiraine chose her questions carefully. To find the answers and not reveal too much. "The Horn of Valir is not mentioned in the prophecies, but is it linked to the dragon anywhere?" "No, except for the fact that the horn must be found before Tarmon Gaedon, and that the dragon reborn is supposed to fight the last battle. There is no link between them at all." The white-haired woman sipped her tea and waited. "Does anything link the dragon with Toman Head?" Van Deen hesitated. "Yes and no. This is a bone between Adelius and me." Her voice took on a lecturing tone, and for a time she did sound like a brown. "There is a verse in the original that translates literally as, 5 ride forth and 4 return. Above the watchers shall he proclaim himself, bannered cross the sky in fire." Well, it goes on. The point is the word Mavron. I say it should be translated not simply as watchers, which is Avron. Mavron has more importance to it. I say it means the watchers over the waves, though they call themselves Domier Avron, of course, not Mavron. Adelius tells me I'm quibbling, but I believe it means the dragon reborn will appear somewhere above Toman Head, in Arad Doman or Saldaea. Adelius may think I'm foolish, but I listen to every scrap I hear coming from Saldaea these days. Mazrim Time can channel, so I hear, and our sisters haven't managed to corner him yet. If the dragon is reborn and the Horn of Valir found,
Then the last battle is coming soon. We may never finish our history. She gave a shiver, then abruptly laughed. Odd thing to worry about. I suppose I am becoming Mora Brown. Horrible thing to contemplate. Ask your next question.
I do not think you need worry about time, Moiraine said absently. It was a link with Toman Head, however small and tenuous. He will be dealt with as Loghain was. What of Shadar Logoth?
Shadar Logoth, Van Deen snorted. In brief, the city was destroyed by its own hate, every living thing except Mordeth, the counselor who began it all, using the tactics of the Dark Friends against the Dark Friends, and he now lies trapped there waiting for a soul to steal. It is not safe to enter, and nothing in the city is safe to touch, but every novice close to being accepted knows as much as that. In full, you will have to stay here a month and listen to Adelius lecture. She has the true knowledge of it. But even I can tell you there's nothing of the dragon in it. That place was dead 100 years before Urien Stonebow rose from the ashes of the Trolloc Wars, and he lies closest to it in history of all the false dragons.
Moiraine raised a hand. I did not speak clearly, and I do not speak of the dragon now, reborn or false. Can you think of any reason why a fade would take something that had come from Shadar Logoth?
Not if it knew the thing for what it was. The hate that killed Shadar Logoth was hate they thought to use against the Dark One. It would destroy Shadowspawn as surely as it would those who walk in the light. They rightly fear Shadar Logoth as much as we.
And what can you tell me of the Forsaken?
You do leap from subject to subject. I can tell you little more than you learned as a novice. No one knows much more of the Nameless than that. Do you expect me to ramble on with what we both learned as girls?
For an instant, Moiraine was silent. She did not want to say too much, but Van Deen and Adelius had more knowledge at their fingertips than existed anywhere else but the White Tower, and more complications awaited her there than she cared to deal with now. She let the name slip between her lips as if it were escaping.
Lanfear.
For once, the other woman sighed, I know not a whit more than I did as a novice. The Daughter of the Night remains as much a mystery as if she truly had cloaked herself in darkness. She paused, peering into her cup, and when she looked up, her eyes were sharp on Moiraine's face. Lanfear was linked to the dragon, to lose Theron Telamon. Moiraine, do you have some clue as to where the dragon will be reborn? Or was reborn? Has he come already?
If I did, Moiraine replied levelly, would I be here instead of in the White Tower? The Amarlin knows as much as I, that I swear. Have you received a summons from her?
No, and I suppose we would. When the time comes that we must face the dragon reborn, the Amarlin will need every sister, every accepted, every novice who can light a candle unguided.
Van Deen's voice lowered, musing. With such power as he will wield, we must overwhelm him before he has a chance to use it against us, before he can go mad and destroy the world. Yet first, we must let him face the Dark One.
She laughed mirthlessly at the look on Moiraine's face.
I am not a red. I've studied the prophecies enough to know we dare not gentle him first. If we can gentle him, I know as well as you, as well as any sister who cares to find out, that the seals holding the Dark One in Sheol Ghul are weakening. The Ilianers call the Great Hunt of the Horn. False dragons abound, and two of them, Loghain and now this fellow in Saldaea, able to channel. When was the last time the Reds found two men channeling in less than a year? When did they last find one in 5 years? Not in my lifetime, and I am a good deal older than you. The signs are everywhere. Tarmon Gaedon is coming. The Dark One will break free, and the dragon will be reborn. Her cup rattled as she set it down. I suppose that is why I feared you might have seen some sign of him.
He will come, Moiraine said smoothly, and we will do what must be done.
If I thought it would do any good, I'd pull Adelius's nose out of her book and set off for the White Tower. But I find I'm glad to be here where I am instead. Perhaps we will have time to finish our history.
I hope that you will, sister.
Van Deen rose to her feet. Well, I have tasks to be about before bed. If you have no more questions, I will leave you to your studies. But she paused and revealed that however long she had spent with books, she was still of the Green Aja. You should do something about Lan, Moiraine. The man is rumbling inside worse than Dragonmount. Sooner or later he will erupt. I've known enough men to see when one is troubled with a woman. You two have been together a long time. Perhaps he has finally come to see you are a woman as well as Aes Sedai. Lan sees me as what I am, Van Deen. Aes Sedai. And still as a friend, I hope. You blues. Always so ready to save the world that you lose yourselves. After the white-haired Aes Sedai left, Moiraine gathered her cloak and, muttering to herself, went into the garden. There was something in what Van Deen had said that tugged at her mind, but she could not remember what it was. An answer, or a hint to an answer, for a question she had not asked, but she could not bring the question to mind either. The garden was small, like the house, but neat, even in moonlight aided by the yellow glow from the cottage windows, with sandy walks between careful beds of flowers. She settled her cloak loosely on her shoulders against the soft coolness of the night. What was the answer, and what was the question? Sand crunched behind her, and she turned, thinking it was Lan. A shadow loomed dimly only a few paces from her, a shadow that appeared to be a too tall man wrapped in his cloak. But the face caught the moon, gaunt-cheeked, pale, with black eyes too big above a puckered, red-lipped mouth. The cloak opened, unfolding into great wings like a bat's. Knowing it was too late, she opened herself to Saidar, but the drug car began to croon, and its soft hum filled her, fragmenting her will. Saidar slipped away. She felt only a vague sadness as she stepped toward the creature, the deep crooning that drew her closer suppressed feeling. White, white hands, like a man's hands but tipped with claws, reached for her, and lips the color of blood curved in a travesty of a smile, bearing sharp teeth. But dimly, so dimly, she knew it would not bite or tear. Fear the drag car's kiss. Once those lips touched her, she would be as good as dead, to be drained of soul, then of life. Whoever found her, even if they came as the drag car let her fall, would find a corpse without a mark, and cold as if dead 2 days. And if they came before she was dead, what they found would be worse, and not really her at all any longer. The croon pulled her within reach of those pale hands, and the drag car's head bent slowly toward her. She felt only the smallest surprise when a sword blade flashed over her shoulder to pierce the drag car's breast, and little more when a second crossed her other shoulder to strike beside the first. Dazed, swaying, she watched as if from a great distance as the creature was pushed back, away from her. Lan came into her view, then Jaime, the gray-haired warder's bony arms holding his blade as straight and true as the younger man's. The dragcar's pale hands bloodied as they tore at the sharp steel, wings buffeting the two men with thunderclaps. Suddenly, wounded and bleeding, it began to croon again, to the warders. With an effort, Moiraine gathered herself. She felt almost as drained as if the thing had managed its kiss. No time to be weak. In an instant, she opened herself to Saidar, and as the power filled her, steeled herself to touch the shadow spawn directly. The two men were too close. Anything else would harm them as well. Even using the one power, she knew she would feel soiled by the drug car. But even as she began, Lan cried out, "Embrace death!" Jaime echoed him firmly. "Embrace death!" And the two men stepped within reach of the drag car's touch, drove home their blades to the hilt. Throwing back its head, the drag car bellowed, a shriek that seemed to pierce Moiraine's head like needles. Even wrapped in Saidar, she could feel it. Like a tree falling, the drag car toppled, one wing knocking Jaime to his knees. Lan sagged as if exhausted. Lanterns hurried from the house, borne by Van Deen and Adelius. "What was that noise?" Adelius demanded. She was almost a mirror image of her sister. "Has Jaime gone and—" The lantern light fell on the drag car. Her voice trailed off. Van Deen took Moiraine's hands.
It did not.
She left the question unfinished, as to Moiraine's eyes, a nimbus surrounded her. Feeling strength flowing into her from the other woman, Moiraine wished, not for the first time, that Aes Sedai could do as much for themselves as they could for others.
It did not, she said gratefully. See to the guiding.
Lan looked at her, mouth tight. If you had not made me so angry I had to go work forms with Jame, so angry I gave it up to come back to the house.
But I did, she said. The pattern takes everything into the weaving.
Jame was muttering, but still allowing Van Deen to see to his shoulder. He was all bone and tendon, yet looked as hard as old roots.
How, Adelius demanded, could any creature of the shadow come so close without us sensing it?
It was warded, Moiraine said.
Impossible, Adelius snapped. Only a sister could...
She stopped, and Van Deen turned from Jame to look at Moiraine. Moiraine said the words none of them wanted to hear.
The Black Aja.
Shouts drifted from the village.
Best you hide this, she gestured to the drug car sprawled across a flower bed. Quickly. They will be coming to ask if you need help, but seeing this will start talk you will not like.
Yes, of course, Adelius said. Jame, go and meet them. Tell them you don't know what made the noise, but all is well here. Slow them down. The gray-haired warder hurried into the night toward the sound of approaching villagers. Adelius turned to study the drag car as if it were a puzzling passage in one of her books.
Whether Aes Sedai are involved or not, whatever could have brought it here?
Van Deen regarded Moiraine silently.
I fear I must leave you, Moiraine said. Lan, will you ready the horses?
As he left, she said,
I will leave letters with you to be sent on to the White Tower if you will arrange it.
Adelius nodded absently, her attention still on the thing on the ground.
And will you find your answers where you are going?
Van Deen asked.
I may already have found one I did not know I sought. I only hope I am not too late. I will need pen and parchment.
She drew Van Deen toward the house, leaving Adelius to deal with the drug car.